Everybody, thank you for joining us. Welcome back to Comedy on Vinyl. This week, I have Tess Barker with me. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
This is so much fun. Okay, so you wanted to... Nobody has yet to ask me to talk about Cat Williams. And unfortunately, I will admit that I didn't get to listen to his album. But this is all about you and why you like Cat Williams. Okay. So what was the album you picked again?
It's Pimpin' Pimpin', which is his 2009 album.
Mm-hmm. And why was it... obviously, you didn't hear it that long ago, but why is it so influential to you?
It's so influential to me.
Or at least why do you love it?
I should talk about why I love it. I don't know how similar my style is to Cat Williams. Uh-huh. But I really, as a comedy fan, love comedians where there's something just about the way they talk.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny, where they have got like really good word choice and where they just have that perfect sense of repetition and just phonetically are like funny.
Of course. Yeah.
So that's what's always cracked me up about Cat Williams. He has a joke on that album called Poor Little Tink Tink, which is about David Petraeus, actually.
Oh, really?
Or not David, I'm sorry, what's the guy who killed his girlfriend? The runner.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Petraeus.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Yep. Anyway, so he just keeps repeating the phrase, Poor Little Tink Tink. And I don't know, like, I just love, like, that kind of word choice and stuff like that. And I think his social commentary is really dead on. Like, he doesn't get... I wanted to talk about him because I feel like he doesn't get enough credit for being an astute social commentarian.
Right. Well, I mean, he's one of those guys where if you're not paying attention and if he's not maybe in your circle of influences, you assume he's just, like, just personality. You know what I mean?
Exactly,
from a distance,
yeah.
That's definitely what I used to assume, is that he's just personality.
Yeah. But I think he's actually a very substantive comedian.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, he has obviously had those, you know, sort of run-ins with the law. And I feel like that kind of overshadows him as a comedian, too. But I actually, and I guess what I admire about him when I do try to do my own comedy is I think he's very honest.
Yeah.
Certainly about the way that he sees the world and the way that he sees particularly race and political issues and the way that we treat famous people. So
yeah.
I always love comedians who are honest, and that's something I certainly strive for in my comedy.
Yeah. No, I mean, and it's one of those things where it is sad when that stuff, and I mean, it's done, I have done it too. I've done the dick thing. I've been like, of dismissing somebody at least for a little while because of some shit that they've done. But I mean, that would be like looking at, not to necessarily compare him to Lenny Bruce, but looking at Lenny Bruce only as a heroin addict. I mean, it's not fair.
Absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree. Yeah. And that is, of course, that thing that I think a lot of people struggle with, is separating an artist from maybe things that they've done in their personal life.
Mm-hmm.
I personally am sort of guilty of sort of arbitrarily choosing who I'm mad at and who I'm not.
Yeah.
Especially comedians. Most of us are assholes.
It's hard. It's so hard. Yeah. Because I love Woody Allen's work.
I know.
And, like, I won't pay for a Roman Polanski movie. But
exactly.
You know what I mean?
I know. There's like no rhyme or reason
really
to it.
Hard. Yeah.
It's like, who have I read more blogs about? I don't know.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. So when did you start comedy?
I started stand-up. I guess I just came on my 8-year anniversary.
Shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So 2006.
All out here, or did you start?
Always out here, yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Where are you from originally?
I'm from here.
Oh, you are from here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. All right. So did you grow up in an area where... you knew a lot of people who were going into entertainment and comedy, or no?
Yes, particularly, I was actually a child actor.
Oh, okay.
So, I came into LA proper. I'm from, like, the suburbs of LA.
Okay.
So,
okay.
I guess I had a lot of people in my social circle that were in the entertainment industry just from acting classes and going to auditions and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I was the only person really... Well, I was really involved in community theater and stuff like that as a kid, too. Yeah, so I guess I've always been sort of... around entertainment.
Right.
Yeah.
When did you decide then that it wasn't I mean, obviously a stand-up can act, or some of them can, but when did you decide that stand-up was going to be the thing?
I guess as soon as I did it.
Yeah.
I was one of those people that, I guess I sort of had abandoned acting as a teenager just because I couldn't deal with the, being judged on my appearance and all that like horrible stuff that comes with being a professional actor.
Yeah.
And I've always also really enjoyed writing. So I decided to major in screenwriting in college. So when I was like 18, I was like, okay, I think I started taking classes at UCLA extension for screenwriting. And I sort of started to view myself more as a writer than an actor. And then when I graduated college, I always knew that I wanted to get into comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So I started out doing, you know, sketch and improv and stuff like that. liked it, but I was never like the best person in my improv classes. Uh-huh. And then I remember stand-up just, like, terrified me.
I bet.
Like, it scared the shit out of me. And I'm very attracted to things that scare me. So sure. I was like, all right, I better try it. And I had a temp job at Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And the temp before me had left a flyer for a stand-up open mic on the door. And so, like, all right, I guess next Thursday I'm going to go do this.
Shit.
So I just wrote down jokes. I didn't tell my boyfriend at the time that I was going. Uh-huh. I just, like, drove off into the night.
Oh, my God.
And tried it. And had, I guess, a good set and sort of became addicted to it.
Insane. I mean, when you're starting, because I don't do stand-up, when you started doing stand-up, and, again, being a writer, did you feel like being on stage was just... at first an extension of your writing? You're just like, I'm a mouthpiece for the thing I just wrote? Or were you concentrating on personality at first?
I think particularly at first it was more about the writing.
Yeah.
I think I like had written jokes that were like jokes. Mm-hmm, and it was mm-hmm. more about this, oh, clever play on words, yeah. which was, I'm sure was terrible. I don't remember a lot of what my early stuff was, but yeah. And then I think the longer I did it, because I wasn't obviously as comfortable on stage when I first started as I am now.
Sure.
So I don't think that I was really capable of being my true self on stage when I first started. It had to kind of be more about the words.
Was there a point when you, I mean, it probably wasn't like one night where you suddenly realized, oh, I found my stage presence, my stage voice, but do you remember that switch at all?
I kind of do, actually. It was the first, because I also didn't let anyone come see me for like 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then I booked a show at the Ice House, and that was the one that I was like, all right, I mean, it was like in the Annex and, you know, whatever, but and that was the one that I was like, okay, I guess I'll invite people to this one. And there was a lot of people there, and that was my first time performing for like a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I very clearly remember the sensation of like having to slow down wait for the laughter to die down. And that sort of like built in time for me to take things slowly and kind of be myself, kind of like live in my set more so than just like, all right, get to the next joke.
Sure.
So I do remember that being the first time that I kind of felt like I was like surfing on the laughter and taking my time.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of comics have so much anxiety that they just, I'm just going to keep going and I can't fail.
Yeah.
Like, I just keep going and going and going and going. That's typical. I think that's why so many people are afraid of public speaking.
Sure.
It's just like, I'll get it over as soon as I possibly can. But you do have to, just like acting on stage, just like acting, you do have to be able to not just find a rhythm, but like you say, sort of find that space in between what the audience is doing and what the audience is receiving, because they've got to take their time with it too, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And that is actually a good way to go back to Cat Williams, because he's so strong a performer.
Yes.
You know, and like very vocal. I actually noticed, you know, watching some of your stuff, you can get very loud, very boisterous. And that's a strong thing to do, because, you know, it's, I don't know that it's necessarily typical of people.
No.
Especially once alt comedy hit, you know, you got to be quiet, or if you were loud, you had to be a super sarcastic asshole. You had to pick your poison, and you get, you know, you got honest and loud are not two things that always go together.
Yeah, I guess I never thought of that, I guess so.
Because like, if it's confessional, you feel like you have to, you know, be quiet and be conversational tones, but you can be boisterous and express those things about life.
Absolutely. I guess I might get that from coming up in theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of have very theatrical, just in general, I want everything to be musical.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I have very theatrical sensibilities.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this album came out 5 years ago. You had started stand up 3 years before. Mm-hmm. Did you grow up listening to comedy albums at all?
Yeah, I was really into Dana Carvey when I was a kid. I loved Dana Carvey. When I was like in high school, I remember loving Mitch Hedberg.
Of course.
That was like, I think that was one of the first comedy albums I like got stoned to and listened to like 10 times in a row and just couldn't stop laughing. What else did I listen to when I was little? I mean, Eddie Murphy.
Sure.
Delirious.
Mm-hmm.
That was a concert that I used to watch with my dad a lot. Mm-hmm. I remember we had an old VHS copy of it.
Oh, that's good.
And my mom would get pissed because, like, that's super inappropriate.
Of course.
but my dad is also a big character in my stand-up because he's extremely eccentric and inappropriate. And so, but, you know, I'm very, he exposed me to a lot of stuff like that I was probably not quite mature enough for. Sure. But, that I found hilarious.
And all they want us to do is pick a new president. I feel like, didn't we just get out of a fucked up relationship? Maybe we don't need a president right now. Can we be single as a country for a while and maybe date a president, see how that work out for a couple months? This shit is bullshit. I've been confused the whole goddamn election. I've been confused. Because everybody commercial sound good at 2:30 in the goddamn morning. And you done had a rough day and shit. They just, do you care about your family? Yes, I do. Is health care important to you? Well, yes, it is. No, nigga, this motherfucker know me personally. This ain't no regular campaign. This motherfucker's in my family life. I've been confused the whole goddamn election.
But there is... I mean, I grew up watching a lot of movies and stuff that I probably shouldn't have watched either. And there is that sort of that joy that of the undiscovered and the thing you don't necessarily understand, but you totally know you're not supposed to be doing.
Yeah, it's great.
That is the essence of who a lot of comedians are, what it is to be a comedian, because you are just out there like, I'm going to make you laugh, which is a thing you don't just do. You don't, you know, nobody's just walking through life laughing.
Right.
So you're having to push people to this, and some people maybe go too far, depending on your judgment. But,
yes.
You know, I'm trying to think. You just answered the question. Your dad exposed you to a lot of this stuff. So is your dad a funny guy? I assume.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
Not just eccentric, but like,
not
do
just
you get
eccentric.
Your sense of humor from both of them or just from him?
Probably from both of them. I think I get actually most of my sense of humor from my siblings.
Okay.
Both of my siblings are really funny, and mm-hmm. I'm the oldest actually, but okay. The three of us, like, I just remember like laughing a lot as a kid, and mm-hmm. we still, like, no one makes me laugh like my brother and my sister.
Definitely.
I don't know if it's because we had like sort of a weird childhood and we kind of had to make each other
uh-huh.
laugh.
Yeah.
But yeah, my dad's very funny, and my mom's like got like a dry kind of like reserve sense of humor, but she's very good at just like calling out something that's like ridiculous about a situation.
Do you have a favorite bit on this Cat Williams album? Is there a favorite piece?
The Poor Little Tink Tink bit's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you, and I will put clips in once I'm such an asshole. Once I've listened to it, but you want to break it down for me? I don't normally have people do this.
Sure. Well, and there's a lot of, I guess, you know, he's a social commentary. And so what I like about this album is that a lot of what he's talking about is super topical.
Yeah.
But it still just makes me laugh listening to it, you know, 4 years later after these stories aren't in the news at all.
Sure.
Like he talks about, and you know, it was funny because I re-listened to it because I knew we were going to talk about it. And he talks about George Bush. And I was like, oh, it's kind of like refreshing and nostalgic to hear a Bush joke.
Oh, right.
Like how long it's been. Yeah. Remember how fun that was?
It's 100%.
Yeah. So like it was like, oh man, it's been a while since we got to make these kind of jokes. So that's, he opens with like the Bush jokes, but the Poor Little Tink Tink joke is about why am I blanking on his name? I think it's, anyway.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Pistorius.
Thank you.
There you go, yeah.
So it's about the Olympic runner that has prosthetic legs and about people trying to hate on him.
Okay,
it's like,
okay.
And they're trying to say he cheated?
Yeah, right.
The guy with fake legs.
Right.
And then he calls him Poor Little Tink Tink, and then he does this like, impersonation of him running in the like, and like, yeah, you'll play the clip, but it's a great bit.
That's fucking funny.
Yeah.
What is it for you? What do you draw from the most from a comic like him? I mean, is it the theatricality, or do you draw anything specific as far as influences, or is it just, no, this is a funny album I listen to?
I think I probably listened to it just because I thought it was funny, but I'm sure any comedy that I consume and enjoy, I hope that I'm influenced by.
Sure.
I think what I respect about him, and again, what I strive for, is I think he's very brave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He just really doesn't give a shit if I do, and like you talked about earlier, there are people that cross the line and maybe go too far.
And again, that's on an individual basis, of course. You know, we each get to make that decision.
But for my taste, particularly if at the heart of what you're saying isn't hateful, and even then, honestly, I think I'd rather see people err on the side of that mm-hmm. than play it safe.
Sure.
And that's what's great about comedy, right? Like, is it's mm-hmm. it's this area where like you can kind of say things that you're not ever supposed to say
mm-hmm.
in front of other people, and I love the joy he takes in kind of like playing in that area.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you? I'm trying to think. So since you grew up as an actress, can you remember the first time again? And this is a very typical question. I apologize for bringing it up, but do you remember the first time that you maybe either made someone laugh or sort of started to try to figure out what made people laugh? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It caused me to laugh. Like, what the fuck? Why was that funny? You know? But
yeah.
Curious.
I definitely was like that a lot as a kid. I think I remember one of the first times I was really young. I was probably, it's one of my earliest memories. Mm-hmm. And I was like 4 years old and I gone to the grocery store with my mom and I decided to like ditch my mom and I went up to like the front of the grocery store and I started singing La Cucaracha.
Oh my God.
And I was like going full out and doing all the choreography. And I remember like everyone at the checkout line kind of like stopping what they were doing and staring and laughing at me. And then, yeah, coming home and telling my dad and my brother about it.
That is fucking great.
Yeah.
But you had the instinct to just do it.
Yeah, like just really
That's amazing. Do you, what kind of stuff do you bring into your act from being an actress? I mean, do you, is it all just for the delivery and just for convincing people that what you're saying is true and here's my story, this really happened? Or do you get to be theatrical, which is to say a little more character?
Huh. I guess I am kind of a character, but in sort of like a paradoxic way, I guess I'm also more myself on stage than I am in any other situation.
Yeah.
So it's a character because it is sort of like this exaggerated version of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to be conscious that I guess growing up acting, I am very conscious of like make eye contact with people, look around, have good posture, like you know, like very basic things like that.
Sure.
And yeah, it's like, I think I'm not as, if I'm angry in a bit, I'm not really probably as angry, or maybe I am that angry, but in day-to-day life, I don't act like I am.
Mm.
Yeah. And
is that sort of the catharsis of it? Because some people maybe treat stand-up too much like therapy, but I mean, I think there is something legitimate about that, where even if it's the same bit every time, where you're just sort of reminding yourself, oh yeah, I do kind of feel that way about this thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because otherwise, during the day, if all you're doing is bitching in your everyday life, you're going to destroy yourself.
Yeah, and all your relationships.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you have an excuse to do it,
yeah,
and people have paid, or at least have paid for drinks to see it,
yeah,
you know, that do you find that it's easier for you to pull back as far as, like, my brain is just not working right now. If you go maybe like extra amped as far as on stage, if you really exaggerate something, do you find it easier to understand it later on? Whereas like if you were to get extra angry about something you weren't necessarily angry about, do you find yourself being able to examine it more?
Yeah, I do. And I think it kind of naturally opens up a place in your brain where you're like, okay, I think I know what all of my opinions about that thing are. But if you let yourself go to that really extreme place, you see all these little bullet points like in between each thought. And you're like, oh yeah, and this is why, and that's how that connects to that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think letting yourself go to like a really extreme place like that, it kind of cracks open the part of your brain that just deals with like the admin shit.
Sure.
And allows you to like get into the real stuff.
How do you keep track of what the audience is feeling, or can you? Is that too much to think about?
I don't think that I do in any kind of a logical way, but I think it's very similar to just having a conversation with someone, and you can tell when they're interested and you can tell when they're not.
Yeah.
And you've got to kind of just like follow that and just go with it.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Let's see. Did you ever make friends over comedy as a kid? Like, even if it was a TV show, but specifically if there was an album or something, maybe that you shared with people?
Huh.
Because that's one of the things we talk about on the show a lot, only because I started this podcast with some friends who have since moved away, who, you know, like, we became friends over a couple of comedy albums, and it was, like, really integral to who we were. We started to replicate them and try and basically remake those albums.
Right.
You know? And
I think for me it was probably Monty Python movies.
Yeah.
I remember there was like a group of kids, like in my junior high. But yeah, we were all basically friends. We bond. Yeah, I mean that's a perfect age to get into Monty Python. And yeah, it was like you got it.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you understood why that was funny, then you got it. And I definitely had like a group of friends that like we would watch it like a couple times a week probably, and do the coconut thing and quote the knee and yeah. So I think it was Monty Python.
Okay, that's awesome. When did you, I mean, was it different though? Now, once you became a stand-up, what's the sort of the biggest difference between, I think, making friends over comedy as a kid and then making friends through comedy with adults who are already doing comedy? Was it intimidating for you to drop into stand-up like that? Or
yeah, it was definitely intimidating when I started. Yeah. certainly, because it is clicky. Stand-up is a very clicky world, and especially when you first start, and, you know, everyone's... And, like, I don't smoke cigarettes, so I remember that seemed to be the way that a lot of people were meeting each other. It was like... And so then I would just go outside and, like, awkwardly stand there. and I actually feel like I can get along fairly well with a lot of different kinds of people. That's mm-hmm. I've never been super shy, but I remember feeling pretty shy when I first started doing stand-up, and... Like, I was very intimidated to try to talk to people.
Yeah.
Because especially people that I thought were really funny on stage, it was just right. intimidating to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How easy is it for you to watch your own comedy after you've recorded it or listened to it?
Not at all.
No?
I hate it.
And why is that? Is it just the same sort of thing that actors have about watching their own work?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of why I quit acting. I'm extremely, mm-hmm. extremely self-critical.
Mm-hmm.
I hate listening to my outgoing voicemail message. Uh-huh. I hate looking at pictures of myself. I hate watching video of myself.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why is stand-up preferable then? I mean, I guess, is it because it's sort of just like it's gone with the wind once you're done with it? I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think just from a practical standpoint, there's just more. You can be a successful comedian. I feel like I feel really bad for actors in general. I think it's really hard. You really are basically a model, especially as a girl.
Right.
So you really are basically just being judged by your appearance. But there's of course a lot more
to
succeeding in stand up.
And the craziest fucking thing happened. This motherfucker not only started running, this motherfucker started winning. And you know a hater can't stand a goddamn winner. And the last place you want to be in a motherfucking foot race is behind the motherfucker with no goddamn foot. That's the last. I bet that motherfucker's mad as shit. My leg's tired. Ain't your legs tired? His legs ain't tired. He just take. Just paper clips and sparks everywhere. Just take. But you gonna have to be in tune with your star fucking player, cause these haters do not play fair. These hating ass motherfuckers at the Olympic Committee let this motherfucker race and then waited till he won and then disqualified him and said, and I quote, he had an unfair advantage. Are you talking about the motherfucker running with no goddamn legs? Is that who the fuck you talking about? Poor little tink.
I guess I don't think of it that way as far as like the model thing. You know, because in stand-up, at the very least, you were expected at the minimum to be funny.
Which is not an easy feat.
No.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
But it's nice that's the baseline for the most part.
Yeah.
Right? Have you ever gotten into a situation though where that wasn't, where you sort of felt yourself like, fuck, am I acting again? Like where you are kind of all of a sudden it's an appearance thing, or maybe like just in a bad venue or.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah. If you're at like a shitty club or something and people are making generalizations about you, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. See, I don't have that perspective because I don't go around and do this. Even the little bit of acting I do is all, I'm stuck in a room with a camera. So it's great for me.
Yeah.
And I'm also a dude. So it's just, they're not going to do that to me. do you keep notes? Are you like a note, or do you specifically write out your jokes word for word, or how do
I write out? I have my notebook. I never don't have my notebook with me. It's like cell phone notebook.
Of course,
always. I use a Moleskine. I've always used a Moleskine, and I write out. I guess I write them out as full jokes. My stuff is longer too. Like I don't do that many like short jokes. So I kind of like write out almost like rants. And then I, you know, most of it kind of sticks in my brain, and then I kind of freeform a version of that as I try it.
I guess I have to imagine then as an actress though that your memorization skills must be at least above par. It's got to be a lot easier for you to suck that stuff in and spit it back out. Or no?
I guess so. Yeah. I guess so. Yeah. I mean, I give myself a B minus.
Okay.
but I also like to keep it kind of loose.
Sure.
And I'd prefer, although it eventually, like anything I do, generally evolves to a place where I do have very specific verbiage for it.
Mm-hmm.
While I'm writing it, I like to keep it kind of loose so that I can kind of find the different things in the nooks and cracks and
So you and do make like discoveries. To pick apart, you do like to pick apart word choice then.
Oh, word choice is very important to me. Very, yeah.
Because, I mean, I know some comics are very much about word choice, or at least, geez, so sorry, just the structure of the joke more than they are the word choice, when I feel like those two really are just so intertwined that maybe, you know, forgetting word choice could really fuck up a joke.
Oh, it's everything. You know? Yeah. I mean, I wrote lyrics for a musical.
Oh, okay.
And I found that lyric writing was something that I kind of was intuitive for me, because mm-hmm. I'm so I think a lot about word choice as a comedian. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to end on a k or a t, sure. or, you know, like there's things like that where it's like, no, you have to punctuate that with a one syllable word that ends in, you know, and if I'm writing like a script too, I'm like, it'll bug the shit out of me until I figure out like what is the exact perfect word to put there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think word choice is very, and that's again, Cat Williams, love his word choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you can nail that, then like almost nothing else matters really.
For sure. I don't know a whole lot about Cat Williams, but you're talking about his honesty. Is there something in this that sort of resonates more? Because every once in a while, a comic will shock you, and it's like, oh, they're telling a really personal story. Is there something like super personal on this of his that sticks out?
No, I wouldn't say that this is a very personal album. Okay. I do love, like, I'm a huge, I mean, as most people are, a huge Kyle Kinane fan.
Sure.
He's someone that. And that's interesting because I'm, like, friends with him. Mm-hmm. So it's weird, like, oh, I've been influenced by him. But I have. Yeah. I think Kyle is I love he's a very, like, personal comedian. And mm-hmm. I love his honesty and, like, the way that he tells a story.
Yeah. He's got, but he does, the thing with Kyle Kinane is he has this weird distance from it, too.
You know,
he's telling you very, but he's almost dismissive of the story he's telling you.
Yeah, himself. Yeah.
He's like, look at the asshole I am. But he does it in this, like, I don't know, he does it in such a charming way. Do you have a way of breaking down your own perspective, or is it just like, no, this is me, I'm doing my stand-up, or do you have an idea of who this character is that we were sort of talking about, or no?
Huh, yeah, I think I do.
Yeah.
I do have an idea of who a character is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Could you condense it if somebody was to be like, we want to make a sitcom out of your stand-up?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, they're going to do that for you. They're going to condense it for you, and it's going to be shitty, but what would you condense it into?
I think I would borrow a line from my friend Matt Ingebretson, who called me the thinking man's Britney Spears.
That is a complicated thought. Yeah. That is a complicated thought, and it could be an insult if it wasn't for the thinking man's part. You know
right.
what I mean? Like, that's borderline. That's really funny.
Well, and I, in particular, am a huge... I talk a lot about Britney Spears. Mm-hmm. And probably an unhealthy amount of operating spheres. But yeah, no, I think that's sort of the character, though, is like, it's like I am maybe just kind of like your every girl fuck up,
mm-hmm.
Or just every person fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I guess I hopefully have the insight to show you why or how or what this asshole is really thinking.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah.
No, I get that. do you ever, my fucking brain has stopped. Oh my god, I'm so sorry. Like, this is fascinating to me. Normally I can just bounce back to the album, but like normally don't really get into the sort of the math of doing stand-up, but do you ever is it ever a concern of yours if you're not pulling in a certain segment of the audience? Do you ever like all of a sudden like, why the fuck are these people over here not reacting?
Yeah.
Do I need to do something? And is there a way to analyze that, or do you have to let that go?
I will always try to engage them first.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my pet peeves, especially if you're having to follow a person that does this,
mm-hmm.
and especially if a host does this,
mm-hmm.
but I hate when a comic becomes adversarial with the audience.
Yeah.
I never think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I think you should always be the bigger person and always try to be inclusive and always give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Never assume it's because they're stupid or they don't get what you're saying.
Right.
So I always try to come from, and I think every time I'm on stage, it's almost like I almost look at it as like, oh, I'm hosting a party and I mm-hmm. want you guys all to be having a good time. So I'll try to always do that and try to include them and engage them. And of course, there's just some people that you're not going to get.
Of course.
That just, yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the people that are not laughing and in sort of a shitty mood like that, they really don't want you to call attention to them.
No.
And that's,
Of course not.
Yeah, yeah. It's like going up to a girl on the street and be like, smile. Yeah, fuck you.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing is, and also, it's hard when you want, as an entertainer, especially as a comedian, you are living off of laughs. It's really hard to remember sometimes that some people are super entertained and never show it.
Yeah.
Ever.
That's a bummer.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I even find myself doing that. Like, when I get super Asperger's-y, I'm totally like, this is the best thing in the world, but you can't tell.
Yeah.
You can't see it on my face. And I feel that's why I don't go watch stand-up shows, because I'm not the ideal audience member. You know, at home, I'll watch your shit at home, and I'll laugh.
There you go.
But if in person, it's so hard. Do you, do you ever have a reason or need to, do you go see stand-up when you're not performing? Is it important to you, or are you very much just like, I'm here, I'm doing a show, and I'll watch from the sidelines?
Yeah, I love watching stand-up still. Yeah. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm not gonna, if it's like a friend of mine's show, I mean, the reality is I don't have that many free nights.
Sure.
But, yeah, if it's like a fun show or a show that I have a bunch of friends on, or there are certain comedians that I'll, like, go out of my way to go see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I paid comedians that I've paid to go see in the last 5 years,
mm-hmm.
Bill Burr, Louis C.K., and Chris Rock.
Sure. Of course. Yeah. Oh, my God, Chris Rock. God,
yeah.
That's awesome.
I mean, Chris Rock.
A couple of friends of mine once, who, the people who used to do the podcast with me, they were in somewhere in New York, or maybe some bumfuck part of New York, and just all of a sudden he just walked in and just, you know, kicked the shit out of the room, just walked, because they did not expect it. I was just like I wanted to kill them when they told me they got to see Chris
Rock God.
Live and for free.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's mind-blowing.
Yeah, I think Chris Rock is the only comedian I've ever seen ever where it was like I almost needed him to stop because my stomach hurt so bad from laughing. Or it was like, you know, usually even a really solid person who's just killing you at least get like a little reprieve, but he just gets this rolling laughter.
Oh, yeah.
Where like the laughter hasn't even subsided from the last punchline. Mm-hmm. And he's already got you like going on. I mean, he's,
seriously,
yeah,
he hammers the room though, and I don't know how you keep doing that.
Yeah,
like he just slides into this delivery. Here's another one.
Yeah.
His
shit is tight too.
Oh yeah.
I mean, talk about word choice and structure, and there's no wasted words in a Chris Rock joke.
Yeah, I don't know how big his, you know, I don't know how big his team of writers is. I'm not that familiar with it.
He certainly has one though. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine doing that. I mean, as a stand-up yourself, I'm writing my own shit, I'm performing my own shit. Like, I mean, can you even imagine the idea of having a team of people putting those words in your mouth? I mean,
no.
And how would you wrangle that? Like, somebody's got to put those words in my mouth, and it's got to sound natural. It's got to sound organic.
Yeah, I think I would be kind of a nightmare to do that for. I mean, if I'm ever in that situation, mm-hmm. I kind of pity the people who are writing for me.
If a motherfucker fall in front of you in 2000 goddamn eight, and you are not a doctor on duty across the street from the hospital, it is your obligation to get 7 laughs off that motherfucker before he get off the ground. Call another nigga so he can get 4-5 in. You gonna have to, because they want you to be miserable. I laugh at shit I'm not even supposed to laugh at. I'll laugh first and apologize after. Like when they was talking about the polygamy ranch and they had them all on TV before they showed them and shit, when they was just showing the ranch and they had told us all the kind of fucked up shit that was going on in there, I'm watching TV like, just show us what these motherfucking monsters look like. Just show us what these hateful motherfucking creatures look like. And then they opened the doors and these motherfuckers came out like Little House on the Goddamn Prairie and said, dun, 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 dun. And bitch came out with a dress made out of construction paper and leaves and said, I laughed the whole goddamn time.
It's not that it doesn't still exist, but do you miss the concept of sort of arena rock comedians, because you don't get to see that? I mean, how big was the show, the Chris Rock show? I have to admit.
Huge. Universal City Walk. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's still not as common as in the days when Steve Martin made it a reality. I mean, he's the guy who's selling out 35,000 seat stadium.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I sort of wish that would come back, at least personally.
I totally agree.
You know,
Cat Williams is an arena comic,
right? And
yeah,
that's one thing about him, that like the guy can, he's not a guy that I don't think people are just sitting around and expecting him to pop up in a club.
No.
You know?
No.
It's this weird thing where, like...
And he wouldn't work in, like, a coffee shop.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
No one would... Everybody would be throwing their laptops on the floor and be like, well, you're being a little too loud, sir. Like,
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's... It just... Yeah, I guess it's true. It doesn't work. Your personality is sometimes way too big for the room.
Definitely.
Have you ever seen a comic like that who's like, oh my God, they don't belong in here. They really need a bigger room.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I see that a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
It's so strange to me.
Yeah. Well, and it's, I mean, that's a practical problem that I face sometimes. Like, I've got a couple jokes that are just, like, big
mm-hmm.
in every way, like, very physical mm-hmm. And just big. And it's really hard to write those because you don't have a lot of opportunity to work them out.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's fucking awkward. Sure. If you're doing something that has, like, choreo, and you're at, like, you know, an open mic where there's five people, you really can't do it without embarrassing everyone involved.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah, just, I mean, that's why, yeah. Maybe that's part of the reason why there aren't as many people like that.
I guess.
Alt comedy, too. I mean, I think that's why we have all these, like, kind of quieter comics. I don't know what came first, the lack of audience demand or the comics that were doing it.
Right, yeah, I don't know. Do you, it was actually going to be my next question, was how do you write out a physical bit, and why is it important to you, do you think, to really work that part of the comedy?
Well, I have this one joke that I almost never do. It's on my website right now. I need to change it out, but it's called Shoes Off Drunk. And
I was just watching that when I came here.
And that joke, you can't tell in that video, but I do the whole thing standing on my toes.
Oh.
And so then at the end, when I take off my shoes, I, like, step down because I want the audience to feel this, like, sense of tension, like, while I'm talking about how uncomfortable the shoes are. And it's a long joke. It's, like, 5 minutes long. And then I want you to feel the relief, like, when I finally step down.
Oh, my God.
And that joke, like, I literally had to, like, choreograph.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wear yoga pants and sit in my apartment and be like, okay, this looks like a girl who's...
Jesus.
Yeah, I felt like a complete insane person. But, yeah, things like that, physical, I will just, like just... play with in my apartment and do different versions of. And
does that come though from standing there just as not enough? Like, it's just doesn't.
Yeah, I don't do that all the time. I mean, I think you have to be careful. You have to be very judicious about how often you do stuff like that, or it also loses. You don't want to be one of those people that just.
Sure.
Well, I guess, but yeah, like you said, Chris Rock can do it. I don't know.
But some people just sit on the mic. They very much just, they can stick there. They're stuck to
the mic
and do nothing.
Yeah,
they don't
even
walk the room.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I guess that's also probably what your natural personality is.
Sure.
I also am, like, kind of just always moving around and everything. So I think that's just my natural energy is I'm not someone. I definitely would feel very uncomfortable with the mic and the mic stand.
Yeah.
I have it out right now.
Yeah. Do your words inform your movement more, or is it ever the other way around, where you're like, well, this would work better with this thing I'm doing? Because that's definitely more of a performance art piece at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I think in, like, a really physical joke that, yeah, the words inform the movement. I think I conceive of it more how I want it to look first,
mm-hmm.
and then find the words that would go with it.
Were you always that physical, though? I mean, obviously not when you're first doing an open mic. I can't imagine.
No, that's something that... Yeah, that's something that evolved. But, yeah, I think I've always had a fairly specific posture that I assume on stage.
Okay.
And I've definitely always... And I think I got this from Chris Rock.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always kind of paced back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's... I got that, too. I used to substitute teach.
Okay.
And I think, and I had already started doing stand-up when I started substitute teaching, mm-hmm. and I realized that, like, if you had a room full of, like, 30 unruly 7th graders,
mm-hmm.
if you moved around and made sure that everyone in the room knew that you were looking at them,
mm-hmm.
they were much more likely to shut up.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's one thing to just try and do the, I'll make eye contact with everybody thing. It's another to be physically present right in front of them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So, what's the first time you ever heard, when's the first time you heard Cat Williams?
It was this album.
It was?
Yeah,
it really
was. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. That's why I love this album, and my sister actually is the one who gave it to me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is, like, my first exposure to Cat Williams.
That's crazy.
Was this album. I'd never seen, like, any of the other stuff that he'd done or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And, my sister and I have, like, the exact same sense of humor.
Okay.
Like... And we also have the same, like, obnoxious cackle. So she's the one who gave me, like, a hard copy of the album.
Uh-huh.
And I remember just listening to her and, like, busting up. And, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. What was the first thing that struck you about it, though?
Oh, just right off the bat, the first joke where he's talking about George Bush. He goes, how are you going to fuck up everything? Everything? Everything. And just like the way that he said that, I remember my sister and I just dying. Like, yeah.
That's really kind of remarkably musical, though. I mean, not to just bring it back to your acting, but I mean, that's got to be some appeal.
Right? Definitely, yeah. Yeah, it's very musical. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you do some performance art stuff more than just stand up?
Yeah, I do. I did a lot of sketch, like right out of college. I did a lot of sketch and web video stuff. I have a group called Lady to Lady, and that is a live talk show. And in addition to that, we do sort of sketch stuff throughout that, and sometimes make videos for stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I love making videos with those girls. And I do, so that's like, and then if somebody asks me to be in something, I'll do that. Sure. But then I also do a lot of other writing stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think what I asked a second ago was, does it help knowing that your rock is stand-up and that everything else can be peripheral?
Yes. And I think that actually quitting acting has made me like acting more. Mm-hmm. Because there's something that's like a huge relief about the fact that I know that stand-up is going to be my bread and butter. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I'm holding on to. That's sort of like my central driving force. Yeah. And then it's a huge relief to not feel like all of my eggs are in the acting basket. And I can literally just be doing it to have fun.
Yeah.
And I've had more success because of that.
Yeah.
Because I'm not putting that on myself. I think so I'm probably a better actor. Yeah.
Is it one of those things? Do you still dread, or did you ever dread auditions? Because that is the one. Those are the horror stories I always hear, the worst part of acting.
Yeah. Honestly, I never. No, I actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I like auditions.
The competition part is okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm fine with that.
Blows my mind. I mean, I guess you're a singer too, right? So I mean, that's different. If you started when you're a kid, maybe it's different. Cause.
Yeah, I think it's just so ingrained in me that that's like go time.
Wow.
Yeah, I love. I think what I most like about auditions is like just an opportunity to perform. Mm-hmm. I also don't go on them very often.
Right.
So like it's more of like a treat.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's like a fun thing to do. But when I was going on a lot of auditions, I think what I didn't like about, I think I like the audition itself, but what drives me crazy and what still drives me crazy about all aspects of this shit is the waiting afterwards.
Yeah.
And the watching your phone and the checking your inbox and
yeah.
I mean that's I don't enjoy that.
I guess that's the thing about stand up is at least it's instant gratification. It is kind of like an audition every night.
Yes.
You have no idea how anybody's going to react.
No.
You know instantly whether or not it worked.
Right. Yeah, you're not losing sleep wondering if the audience had a good time.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, exactly.
That's good, I guess, because you can go back and you can hammer it out and really work your stuff out. Are you ever comfortable saying, though, that you've worked the joke out, it's good?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, and probably to my detriment. I mean, there are a lot of jokes that I get to the point where I'm like, this is that joke. Because again, like once I've got the word choice nailed down on the timing of it, and you know, I need to pause here and there should be probably, and that's the part that changes maybe is like the rhythm changes every night. Mm-hmm. I'm really, and this is probably really obnoxious, but like I'm really into, like I do a lot of like face tags and shit like that. Uh-huh. I love like the silence in between I love just kind of like flirting with the audience a little bit and doing that. And that stuff changes night by night. But sometimes a joke can get stale just because I'm not varying it. So sometimes I'll take a joke out, and then when I bring it back, I will kind of fuck with it and change it a little bit.
Yeah.
Just to make it more interesting or keep it fresh.
I see. It's one of the... I do sort of forget that, you know, that stand-up can't... That, you know, it's not improv, you know? So it's one of those things where it's like, oh, no, it's just free-flowing. They do whatever they want, and you always have to remember that it's such a tight art that people don't always appreciate that part of it.
You just gonna have to fucking do your fucking best and try as hard as you can, because sometimes shit just does not work out the way you motherfucking plan. That's just a part of life. Sometimes shit do not work out the fucking way you plan. I'm gonna give you a prime example. I waited my whole fucking life trying to get a motorcycle. My whole fucking life, all I wanted was a motorcycle. And first, I couldn't afford the motorcycle. Then when I could afford a motorcycle, then I had kids, and you can't just get a motorcycle as your primary means of transportation if you got kids. You don't know what to tell them in the driveway. You just, I ain't got no room. And I finally was able to fucking get the motorcycle. I was happy like a kid at motherfucking Christmas. You don't understand. I have never been this goddamn happy. I had the motherfucking motorcycle, and it was small and black and fast, just like me. And I had got the black Harley Davidson boots and the leather one piece that zip up here and got the knee pads and shit already in it. I look like a black toddler superhero. Like, you should call me to solve small crimes and shit. But I felt good than a motherfucker, because I'm not that big in regular life, but on a motorcycle, nigga, I'm the perfect size. If you look in the rear view, you don't even see me coming, nigga. It just look like a bike is coming by itself, nigga.
What made, and I actually asked Brandy this when she was on, what made you think that stand-up was a thing you should and could do? And I only say that because it scares me and I don't understand the impulse. I act, I do all this other stuff. Stand-up scares the shit out of me, and I don't understand how, what you had to do to yourself, or if you had to do anything, to gear up to just say, no, this is it, I'm sticking with it.
Honestly, like I said, I was attracted to it because I was afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then once it was like a very instant thing for me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember ever deliberating, like, oh, should I switch over, because I was like pretty heavily involved in improv and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it was almost just like, oh no, this is it. Wow. I mean, it was like the first night I did it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I couldn't sleep that night.
Yeah,
like I got that like adrenaline rush of like, oh god, like this is. And I mean, that week I just went to open mics like every night.
Mm-hmm.
And just never stopped.
Right. It's just one of those things where I don't think people could watch a ton of live shows, you know, and be big comedy fans as I am, and still forget that there's a way to make a living doing it. It's just, it seems like it just seems scarier to me even than acting. I mean, I came out here thinking I was going to make a living in film.
Right.
You know, eventually realized that was unrealistic the way I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get to live by your own rules in film, but in stand-up, I feel like maybe you do a little bit.
Definitely. Yeah. And that's another thing that I love about stand-up is mm-hmm. how self-sufficient you can be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, aside from just creatively how self-sufficient you are, like, you don't need a set. You don't need an orchestra.
Yeah.
You just need a microphone. Like, I always love when I do a college and I have to fill out my writer. It's like, what are your tech needs? A mic and a stool.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And it is. Like, if you are a go-getter and you're, you know, intent on making yourself better and you're mm-hmm. a hard worker, and of course there's like, you know, an amount of natural talent you need to have, but you can get gigs and you can get better and you can make a name for yourself.
Yeah.
So I think I think there's a lot of self-sufficiency in stand-up.
Yeah. Was that important to you just as a person, or as a result of having to be, of doing so much acting where it's such a group thing? Was it a result of that? Like, not wanting
yeah.
to do that anymore?
I think so. Yeah. 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 Well, and also just from being a child actor, I mean, that was a very frustrating and disappointing lot.
I can't imagine.
You know? Yeah. So, I mean, literally my entire life, I got a few things, but most mm-hmm. of my childhood, I was auditioning for stuff, coming close at times, not mm-hmm. getting it. Like, that was, like, all that ever happened to me.
Yeah.
And I felt very out of control.
Mm-hmm.
I felt a lot, like, it was about something that I really wanted.
Yeah.
And that was a very, like, frustrating and angering feeling. And so just this feeling of, like, oh, I feel like I have more control over myself mm-hmm. or over my career as a stand-up than I did as an actor.
So it's kind of like, was it like a rediscovery, like a self-rediscovery at some point too?
Yeah, I think so. Because yeah. I think I had sort of at that point, because I love performing. Mm-hmm. I really do. It's
sure.
like one of my biggest passions. But I think I had written off performing and just thought, okay, I'm going to be a screenwriter.
Yeah.
Because I know that I definitely love storytelling, and I love TV, and I love film,
mm-hmm.
but I really did miss the performance aspect of it. So I think it was like, oh, I can still have that.
When it's only you and your words, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That makes sense to me. Did you grow up at all with any physical comedy albums? Because sometimes people kind of get, obviously, I get a little nostalgic about this shit, but, you know, did you grow up with that stuff at all?
Steve Martin, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I did grow up like a ton of physical albums. I mean, mm-hmm. Bill Cosby. You mentioned
sure.
Bill Cosby while you were breaking. And then, yeah, Delirious was more of a concert than it.
Sure.
We didn't listen to a lot of stuff on vinyl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But let's go back to Delirious for a second. Though there is something about, you miss quite a bit of that show just listening to it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's what, and I would say the same thing about Bill Cosby.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But definitely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be, it's the way that he, like, it's the ice cream joke. It's like, you got to see him, like, how he's skipping around, and you have to see the look on his face after the cone drops.
Heartbreaking.
And, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a perfect example of, like, I mean, that was Eddie Murphy at his best. Delirious is, yeah.
Yeah.
Still probably one of my favorite. And so fucked. I mean, really, the AIDS stuff. I forget if it's Delirious or Raw.
Yeah, I can't remember which one. They're both great, but yeah, those that is the one standout thing where it's like, oh, okay.
Okay, that's okay. Not, we can't say that anymore. Ooh. Yeah.
Yep. Okay, yep. He just said faggot like 10 times. Okay, okay. Got it. Yep. You are uncomfortable with gay people. Cool. Yeah, no, I mean, that's the only shit that dates it besides his outfits.
Like, yeah, yeah.
The rest of it's so, and it's like, it's so, he's such an actor.
Yeah.
You know? And that's sometimes my favorite shit for stand-ups.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, Louis C.K. is wonderful, and I think he's a great actor, but I don't necessarily see that on stage as much. I think he's very...
You can listen to a Louis C.K. album.
Yes.
And get it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't think you're missing much if you're not... I mean, of course, I can't imagine seeing him live. That would be mind-blowing. But, like, is Cat Williams similar? I mean, is... Because he doesn't get cast in much, like, real stuff. So, no. I don't know of him as an actor.
Right.
If he's got that kind of instinct. What do you...
I would say definitely, yeah. He's someone that you definitely get more out of by watching him than by listening to him. Although, I think... And a lot like Bill Cosby, I think that they do so much musically with their voice and with their word choice and with their timing that you're going to have fun listening to them.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of, like, facial expressions and moving around and physicality to him, yeah.
Yeah. And it's hard to do that without just mugging. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I think, because otherwise it becomes very boring and dry.
Yeah.
You know, if all you're doing is mugging. I do like the idea of playing with this, not just word choice, but the sound of words. George Carlin's another one that stands out for, at least for me. Is
definitely.
One of the first to just... make me think about how words sound.
Definitely.
You know, and that's one of the kind of beautiful things about stand-up, and that if some people don't necessarily like stand-up, if it's not necessarily their thing, that it is an art form, but it's in, I think, in these more subtle ways, because it is just a bunch of people talking at you. At least that's what it seems like.
Yes.
But these individual, I mean, it's they're these mini, I don't know, it's an auteur thing. It is like you know, just it's your words, your mouth, that's it.
You're the writer, the director, and the actor.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't think about the director part.
No. Mm-mm.
And as much as I hate watching myself, I make myself do it.
Yeah.
Because I do, I think, and again, I think this is like a theater thing, but you really have to think about your stage presence. And you really have to think about the picture that you're painting.
Right.
And just don't be, yeah.
That's awesome.
Just fill your space and be there and engage the crowd. Yeah. And I also, like, as a music fan, I really like pop music.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like to be, if I'm going to go see a show, I want to be, like, wowed. I want to have, an experience.
Of course, yeah. So are you the same then as far as comics go?
I feel like I have very eclectic taste in comedy, actually. Yeah. I like a lot of comedy that a lot of people think is, like, really broad and stupid.
Really?
Yeah. But then I also obviously like, you know, more intelligent, heady people. But, sure. Yeah, I mean, I like Carrot Top.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with Carrot Top, other than his muscles. There's nothing
wrong
with
him. Right. I mean, he's terrifying looking.
Yeah.
And he's certainly not my favorite comedian, but he's so easy to hate on. And I think a lot of what he does is pretty clever.
you have to appreciate all walks of it. Otherwise, you're really just going to be in this little world and you're never going to do much.
Yeah.
It's hard. I like when I hear, like, from somebody who I assume, like, if somebody like David Cross were to say that, oh, yeah, I was a big Gallagher fan, which would never happen. That's never going to happen. But, you know, if somebody like that, you just come out and all of a sudden will admit that they've got some interesting, broad, weird tastes, like, it's like, okay, good. You know what?
You're human.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's all fine and good to be a foodie, but don't pretend like you've never had Taco Bell and liked it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The laugh is... The laugh is the most important fucking thing of that whole thing.
Absolutely.
And it's just, it gets passed up when people, even when I talk about it, because obviously I get way too analytical about comedy, and sometimes you just forget, no, the point is just a laugh.
And I definitely am guilty of that, especially, you know, I've had gigs where, like, I'm opening for someone who I just is really, you know, a bad writer or saying stuff that maybe is even homophobic or misogynistic or racist and is just, you know, for lack of a better word, stupid.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you watch that person kill.
Yeah.
And I've sat in the back of the club like, really? Really? Really, this fucking jackoff? Really? This is what you guys think is funny? But it's like, yeah. Like, maybe there's something to be learned from that. Like, this is what they think is funny.
Sure.
What are they doing? They're making this crowd laugh their asses off. Instead of being so judgmental and getting up on my high horse about that's hack or I've seen that a million times. Like, what... It's either the way they're performing or there is a good twist at the end of that joke. Maybe it's not a smart joke, but they understand structure well enough to where there's a definitive punchline that they're hitting.
Sure.
That's making people laugh.
Yeah. I mean, there's always stuff that you can learn from those people, even if you're not going to necessarily be doing the same kind of shitty jokes they are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, there's always something there. If they're killing, there's a reason for it. Maybe it's just the room.
Yeah.
Maybe the air conditioning's just right.
Right. Know? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Who fucking knows? But that's awesome. Well, this has been a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. I always ask people to, if nobody's ever heard Cat Williams, myself included, why would you recommend listening to this album?
Oh, God. Listen to this album. I mean, really. A, I want to talk about this album because I think not enough people have listened to it.
Okay.
Not enough people like Cat Williams. So listen to it so that you'll be in the cool crowd. But also because I think you'll get like some serious laugh out loud moments. Like every joke, like we've talked about, has these riffs that are just so rhythmically perfect and that just have that perfect sense of repetition. And he's got this really incisive social commentary. He will make you think about race and politics and the way we view each other and the way we treat each other. And it's just fucking hilarious all the way through.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Also, where can we find you on Twitter? Obviously, we can find you on the Lady to Lady podcast, which is great. Where are you on Twitter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
On Twitter, I'm Testify Barker, Testify Barker. I'd like to tweet, follow me there, and yeah, listen to my podcast. My website is testbarker.com. I put my shows and my videos there.
Awesome. Yeah. Easy enough. Well, thank you so much again. And thank you guys for listening, and as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com.